The Data Reaper podcast is a companion which provides extra insight into the weekly report found at viciousyndicate.com. Join us for a deeper dive into the numbers to help you improve your Hearthstone game.
Hello and welcome to episode 70 of the Data Reaper podcast. I'm your host, Ridiculous Hat, and I'm joined by the coolest Snowfall Guardian in town, Zacko. Zach, how you doing?
How you doing, Hat? We're back.
Doing all right. We're back from our little break. That was a little bit chilly in here. I wonder why that is. That's an Alterac joke, you know, because it's all the wind chill.
It's actually pretty cold here, too. Well, relatively to Israel, whatever.
It is winter in the northern hemisphere, so, you know, that's a thing. It's well-timed set release, you know, otherwise, we have a lot of decks to cover, but first we want to let everybody know, remember next week, the report, it's going to be a day late, Friday the 17th. It is not going to be at Thursday the 16th, it's not going to be at noon Eastern, it's going to be a day later than that. We posted in the Theory Crafting article, but want you to hear it here first. Make sure that you know. It's going to be a day late, but there's still going to be a report. Podcast should still be normal time on that Saturday on the 18th. Okay. So, Zach, you have gotten an early look at the developing metagame. And as a reminder to everyone, it's day five right now. Early gone.
5 days worth of data?
Yeah. We have some ideas, some insights, but this may change over the course of the next week.
Yep. So we wanted to do it the podcast a little bit later than normal, just so that you won't be starved to wait for the report on Friday, but there's a lot of things to talk about, Hat, and lots of interesting developments, and we'll see. But again, gotta take everything into perspective that this is early in the meta.
Yeah, it's I imagine that a lot of things will change. I mean, personally, my ladder experience has dramatically shifted over the past few days, as it normally does in the first week of a meta. But let's start by talking about Talk of the Town. Zach, we were excited in the Theory Crafting article about a deck you were calling Among Us Warlock, also known as Owl TK, whatever you want to call it, the deck with the big bird that kills you by playing removal and then double phylactery with Tamsin. So let's talk about Warlock a little bit. What are you seeing there?
So Owl TK, Among Us Warlock, whatever you want to call it, has really definitely taking the meta by storm in the first day or two of the patch. Another theorycrafted article that dominates. We're back to our tradition, right? Though, you know, in the days after, things have relaxed a little bit. And while the deck looks strong, I wouldn't say it's the best deck or even the second best deck or the third best deck on the format. Owl TK Warlock looks like a good deck. It's definitely strong. It's definitely resilient. It definitely has game in a lot of matchups, but it has its counters. It does have some strong counters, mostly the lightning fast combo decks that are able to finish games before it can execute the combo are the ones that usually give it the hardest time. So you're looking at Celestial Druid, Mozaki Mage, Garrote Rogue, Lifesteal Demon Hunter, things like that. The combo decks of Stormwind seem to do well against it, as well as things like even like aggressive Paladin buff decks can also give it a hard time. This deck struggles against Divine Shields, because all of its removal kit is damage-based, so Divine Shield will really give it a hard time. And I'm pretty sure that even though its Libran Paladin matchup is close, Libran Paladin can do some adjustment to really lock out the Warlock. So it's very vulnerable to Vipers because of its reliance on getting rods off. So there are ways to answer Owl TK Warlock, but it is a very good deck. Looks tier one or borderline tier one at most rank brackets. It's like we're early in the meta. It's not yet targeted as hard as it probably should be, and it's not it's already not one of the best decks in the format. So it's a good deck for sure. I think people are paying too much attention to the damage potential of the deck and like talking about owl nerfs. I'll get back to that at the end of the podcast, discuss some of my thoughts that I feel like people are really not pinpointing what the actual issues that causes them, you know, frustration is, right? But we'll talk that at the end of the podcast, really. But the bottom line is, this is a strong deck. Will stand the test of time, but it does have some strong answers that you can definitely punish it. Whether you're playing a strategy that naturally punishes it, or you could put a few cards that make it sweat. That's for sure.
Yeah, the deck is really reliant on Ruined Mithril Rod, which is back from the dead. We already saw a bit of that in Fatigue Warlock right before the end of Stormwind, and we're definitely seeing it in that deck. It's a huge deal, and getting your rods destroyed makes it much harder to survive.
Yes. But that's not all for Warlock. There are, you know, Fatigue Warlock and Handlock, I do see them. They have small play rates, but they do exist. I will say that Handlock looks very, very strong. Possibly stronger than Owl TK Warlock. It might be the strongest Warlock deck right now. Even though it's not played much, you know, you just shove Tamsin in that deck and it works very well. So Handlock is definitely successful in this format. It's just not being played much because of all the attention on the new Warlock deck, but this deck is very good. Fatigue Warlock is another story. Fatigue Warlock, I would say, has been pushed out pretty significantly because of the presence of Alt-TK. In the matchup between Fatigue and and Owls, there is a clear winner. Owl Warlock can finish games much earlier than the Tamsin win condition. And that matchup is highly favorable. So when it comes to Tamsin as a win condition, the presence of Alt-TK pushed it out of the format. And which, by the way, means if you just nerfed the Owl, you would see Fatigue Warlock come back. Is that what you want? I don't know, but that's what's happening right now. So Handlock, very good because it's not reliant on the Tamsin win condition. The Flesh Giant plan, Scavenger plan works really well right now as well. But when it comes to late game combo strategies, combo win conditions, the Alt-TK, the Humongous Owl combo is far superior to the Tamsin fatigue plan. So keep that in mind. So Warlock looking strong. We expected it to be strong. We also expected the Alt-TK deck to be very good. We were right about that. Wow. We were right about a few things, actually. The card preview, we kind of... There's some redemption there from the Stormwind one. But, yeah, it's definitely strong deck. No doubt about it. But there are answers, and I think that once the report comes out on Friday, we're going to show some of these answers and ways to really target it. I don't think it can be overly prevalent without being punished for it. So I think it's in an okay spot.
Yeah, we're not talking like emergency nerf territory. It's not unbeatable.
No, definitely not.
And Warlock is... the conversation around Warlock, I think, has turned into the removal suite and how powerful the deck is at killing stuff and healing stuff. And, you know, that's compelling, and it's certainly a big part of the format. But how the deck wins is not really offensive, and while Rune Mithril Rod being such a big part of the strategy and being so variant, whether you have it and whether it lives or not, I don't necessarily love the play pattern, but it's, if you want to beat this deck, you can beat this deck, and it's not all that hard to do.
Yeah, but when it comes to, again, certain things that I think when such combos exist, people point at the wrong culprit very often. If there was a problem with Owl Warlock, it would not be the Among Us Owl combo. It would be Mithril Rod. But we'll get to that at the end of the podcast. So Warlock, good. It's fine. Handlock, honestly, yeah, is stronger.
Looking at Handlock, too, what I've seen, the cards that I've seen that are included, of course, Tamsin Hero, very, very strong card. And also, Full-Blown Evil seems to be pretty decent to me. I mean, it's too early to talk card inclusions, but I've played against that card a few times, and it feels a lot like Dark Skies sometimes.
Yeah, the list that we have in the report pretty much got it right, I think. Full-Blown Evil instead of the Neophytes and running Tamsin. Tamsin is good in the deck. I'm sorry to tell you that, Hat, but you were wrong.
I'm wrong. This would not be the first time and will not be the last time I've been wrong. And really, my question was like,
why
is
are
it
you
worth
taking
it?
This so well? I wanted to tease you a little bit.
Okay,
why are you
I'm
so
sorry.
Nice?
I can't believe it. Me.
Thank you. Thank you, Hat. You were wrong, Hat.
Me.
Yeah, but... Yeah, but pretty much the rest of the shell works pretty well. You know, the Anetheron, the Flesh Giants, the Gold Chino. This plan works well.
Oh, Handlock cards. Handlock cards are good? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Handlock
Surprise.
Cards are good.
Yeah. You know what else is good? Librams. Librams are good. Talk about those?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's talk about Paladin. Paladin is doing the Paladin thing when it's... looking stronger than any other class, especially through most of ladder. Like, this is the Paladin story, right? Expansion comes out. This deck, this class is dominating ladder. The only place I would say that Paladin is not dominating again is like Legend, Top Legend, where it's one of the stronger classes, but maybe not the absolute best. But Paladin looks very strong. Now, again, I don't know if we should overreact about the fact that Paladin looking so strong, because Paladin tends to do these things where it looks really strong and then it potentially relaxes later on. I'm already seeing a trend of relaxation, but Paladin is good. Like, there's no doubt about it. Libran Paladin, for me, looks like the best Paladin deck right now. It looks very, very dominant in terms of its matchups, like the versatility. It's very hard to target it. There are ways to target it, but it's not easy to lock it out of a matchup of like, I would say Quest Rogue is the counter, the consistent counter, but other things don't really beat it that consistently. And it just looks very good with Iron Deep Trog is the additional one drop next to Alder Attendant that really gives Librim Paladin the early game consistency as well as the late game scaling, right? Like, Trog is threatening on turn one, but it's also very good later in the game because it scales with your buffs, with your wisdoms. It's a fantastic card. Though I will say, for people who are saying that Iron Deep Trog is, overpowered or anything, Iron Deep Trog is about as strong as Aldor Attendant, possibly a little bit weaker than Aldor Attendant in the deck in terms of performance. So that's an interesting thing to keep in mind. I would say that it's not that Iron Deep Trog is this broken card in Librim Paladin that made it overpowered. It's more that now you have another Aldor Attendant level one drop that gives this deck more consistency. But the card that really, really shines and made this deck even stronger is Lightforge Kyriel. This is the best card in Librim Paladin. The very best. It's not close. The card is as insane as people expected. A lot of people expected it to be. This card just gives it the stability in the late game that makes it so hard to kill. Obviously, post-carrier, essentially your Librim of Hopes, heal for 16 because you get half damage mitigation. And yes, Kyriel is still very good, even though there are lots of Vipers in the format. And this is something that we kept banging on before. A tech card never makes a dominant card non-dominant. If we've reached a point where people have to play Viper in order to address Kyriel, that means that Kyriel is already dominating. And this is a situation. Kyriel is dominating. It is just so good. Now, when it comes to the Liberum Paladin build, I would recommend Meaty's list, which is, I think, three cards different than what we posted in the Theorcrafting article. Swaps out the Hold the Bridge for the Brooms and the Barov, and the Sadin, right? We had Sadin and Hold the Bridge, so those are three cards. You swap them out. You run Barov's Broom. Gives you some comeback potential. I wouldn't say that Barov is insane in this deck, but it looks pretty good. But we'll look at the report. Once we work on the report, we'll look at those three cards and see if there's something better that we can do. But the Meaty list, I would recommend it. This is one case where Meaty posts on the lists that are good and not baits. So good job, Meaty, with that. Yeah.
Barrow Broom looks pretty important because otherwise you just kind of get Snowfall Guardianed into next week. So it makes sense to me that you want Barrow Broom in there.
And Broom is very good in the mirror. So Liberum Paladin is a strong deck. It's going to grow in popularity. And Broom can change the mirror game because oftentimes the mirror is about like you're snowballing with like buffs and stuff and trogs. And Barrow gives you a comeback potential without spells, right? To address the trogs or address that big development alongside your Devout Pupils, which has gotten stronger. The Devout Pupil has gotten much better thanks to Stoneheart Vindicator.
Oh, that card is great. Card's really good.
Yes, Vindicator is fantastic. It's a great card that really adds consistency to the deck. Also, another card that I think rose in stock is Noble Mount. This card is fantastic in against Warlocks because of the Divine Shield, the damage base removal. It's very good. Personally, if you're wondering what I've been doing with Liberum Paladin, I'm running Double Viper and Mutinous as my the three cards that you would slot in instead of the Bear of Broom. If you run Double Viper and Mutinous, you can lock out Warlocks completely. Like, I think I've played some games with Paladin. I've played other decks as well. But I've gone 7-0 against Warlocks, our Warlocks, with Double Viper Mutinous. Because what happens is you make sure that their rod never goes off, right? You just lock them out. And Mutinous can sometimes eat their either Tamsin or Owl. If they cannot do the full 112 damage combo, then they cannot beat Liberum Paladin. It's very hard to beat Liberum Paladin that way because you usually have threats on the board that soak up shots as well. So it makes it very difficult for the Warlock to execute. That's what I've been doing. It's just personal anecdote. If you really want to lock Owl Warlocks out of the game, that's what you would do. But Barrow Broom, very helpful in the mirror. In board matchup like Freeze Shaman. So that's kind of what I've been doing. Now, other Paladin decks, there's the aggressive, it's not really hand buff Paladin. It's more of a just buff Paladin, right? Because you're not really playing a Prismatic Jewel Kit. So your only hand buff is really Banana Man, which is pretty much played in every Paladin deck. That deck is also, you know, you're playing Blessing of Authority and Sunwing Squawker. This deck has been going around. It's good against Warlock because, again, their damage-based removal means that they can't really deal with Blessing of Authority. It's just too much health over there. And obviously, there's the famous combo of Trog, Blessing of Authority. Good luck, right? You're doing that on turn six. What the hell does any spell-based deck, it just game over, makes it very hard to deal with.
You call it Buff Paladin, and I think that's not a bad name, but let's call a spade here. This is Trog Paladin. This deck is like, you start with Trog.
I mean, Liberum Paladin is also kind of a Trog Paladin, right?
That's the half Trog. This is the full Trog.
This is the full Trog experience. Yeah, for sure. And this deck, Trog is even better. Because, you know, authority on a Trog is pretty absurd. And could just, like, this is a turn six combo that can just lock out decks out of the game. It can be over. So this is kind of what this deck is trying to abuse. We'll talk about it in more detail in the report. It looks good, but it looks worse than Liberum Paladin. Still, I mean, good enough to be like borderline tier one in at most rank brackets, it's definitely tier one at the lower ends of ladder. But it just seems to be a little bit worse than Lubin Paladin. It's a little bit more gimmicky, I would say. It's a little bit more vulnerable to things. It's not really a defensive deck, right? So, but you know, you still have Kirio. Kirio is still insane. So the deck works pretty well. So that is an option. The Trog Paladin is definitely a deck that looks quite good. And then, you know, other Paladin decks don't see too much play that I can really say. Big Paladin, I don't think, is going to work out in this meta. So I'm not surprised that it doesn't see much play. There's just, like, the pre-expansion concerns of, like, what is this deck supposed to do in the late game? I think pretty much transpired. And beyond that, I'm not really seeing anything else. But Paladin, very good spot. Probably the number one class on ladder right now. But again, it's Paladin. We'll see what happens in a week. I think you can adjust. Like, Lubin Paladin is not a deck without weaknesses, and I think you can exploit it if it's targeted, which it isn't right now, right? Most of the attention is, like, on Warlock rather than Paladin.
At least for now. But yeah, Year of the Griffin has definitely been Year of the Week 1 Paladin Dominance. There have been a couple times when they needed to nerf it, a couple times where they, well, actually both times they needed to nerf it, but it was more obvious than this time what was going on there. Both in Barons on launch, there was a lot going on, and then in Stormwind, it was really just like, hey, by the way, you're dead now because of 5-mana Battlemaster, 1-mana Conviction. What a world that was. So we're not in that territory, but it's still, yeah, it looks really good and is kind of flying under the radar a little bit in terms of how good it actually is, so we'll see. But you talked about Quest Rogue as being one of the counters to Lubin Paladin. Let's talk about Rogue in general. This class has a bunch of stuff going on, some old stuff and some new stuff.
Yeah, so I think Rogue is a good mirror for what's happening in the meta. Right now, I think some of the discourse is talking about how, like, the good decks are the old decks, right? That just add 1-2 cards. And I think a major reason why that is because the old decks don't need to be refined. They don't need to be figured out. You'd put one card or 1-2 good cards from the new set into them, and they function really well because they have been refined for the last 4 months. You don't need to figure out anything. And then when there's a new archetype, they could run a lot of suboptimal cards, a lot of experimentation early in the expansion, and then it may not show the best results because of that. And people look at the statistics and they're saying, oh, all the new decks suck and blah, blah, blah. The old decks are the best. No, you know, it could be true, but you also have to take into account that new decks take a lot of time to work through refinement. And Rogue is a good example because the old Rogue decks are the ones that look like the best decks. You know, you've got Quest Rogue, Garrote Rogue, Poison Rogue even, that look quite good. Poison Rogue is looking good with so many Vipers in the meta. Poison Rogue are looking quite good. But Poison Rogue, right, it just puts Scabs in its build and that's it. And Quest Rogue pretty much puts Scabs in its build and that's it. And Garrote Rogue puts Scabs in its build, and that's it.
Well, you got to put the Guild Trader back if they weren't running it before, but yes.
Yeah, this is pretty much like just Shadowcraft of Scabs in all of these decks and call it a day. There's no refinement that was needed to make these decks perform against the current field, which is why I think part of the reason why they're doing so well. Also, Garrote Rogue is a deck that isn't even popular, even a top legend, it's not particularly popular because people were trying new stuff and they were mostly concerned with countering things that are not Garrote Rogue, right? Trying not to beat Garrote Rogue.
But Zach, one thing, can you remember I was skeptical about this card going in Garrote Rogue?
What? Scabs?
Yes. Remember I was skeptical about that too?
Oh, great. Hat, you were wrong again.
Me.
You see? That's good. You're wrong again. Scabs is insane. Card is
actually the best card in Garrote Rogue hat.
Yeah, I mostly just wanted to make that sound again, which I have to figure out how to make into the title of the episode despite not being a word. But having played with it and against it, I don't think it was a great idea to give that deck 5 healing and chip damage and an unconditional non-spell board clear. And the most important part, a free prep every turn. It's just the hero power is ridiculous.
Yeah, the hero power is absurd. Basically, you know, it's, I don't know if it's like, it's free innervate, pre-nerf every turn, but in a way you can think of it like, it's as if you've played Overgrowth and you're now 2 mana ahead on every subsequent turn. So you basically played Overgrowth, but it scales until 12 mana to 12 mana. So in a way you can consider it to be like a 4 mana effect. A very powerful 4 mana effect, right? Just the fact that you're getting that hero power is worth about 4 mana. So, yeah. And then you add the Jungle Panthers and the Vanish. Yeah, that seems like a 7 mana card that probably is worth double that cost. Scabs is really good. It really helped Garrote Rogue in terms of, like, sometimes the opponent just pressures and have a lot of stats on the board. The little buff decks right now, they're trying to beat the Warlocks. And then they get destroyed by Scabs, right? Like, imagine you're playing Trog, and you're putting Blessing of Authority, and you just get Scabbed. That is a pretty crippling answer to those kind of strategies. So, yeah, Garrote looks very strong. Possibly the best deck at Top Legend right now. Though I will say, a lot of it has to do with the fact that its counters aren't really present, and also some of the decks that maybe could potentially do well against it are not teching against it, right? Like the Freeze Shamans, they're not running Harpies. If you run Harpies in Freeze Shaman and you can gain like 20 armors with 3 cards in one turn, then maybe you can put yourself out of the range of the Rogue, but you're not focusing on running Harpies right now. You're running Vipers because you want to beat the Warlocks. That's kind of what I'm talking about when it comes to the dynamics in the meta. And what deck is being targeted and what deck is being ignored. Right now, Garrote Rogue is being ignored, rightfully so, because its play rate, I don't even think, hit 4% at Top Legend at the moment. Might over the next week, but, you know, people are not too excited about playing this deck. So it's not popular. It's not being targeted. So the people who do play it do well with it. Quest Rogue is very good. I think it's obvious why, because Paladin is strong, right? Paladin is getting more popular by the day, and Quest Rogue is a fantastic answer to Libran Paladin. It's like a 70-30 matchup, so it's very effective. If you want to beat Paladin, Quest Rogue is probably the best way to do that. But again, Quest Rogue, just put Scabs in your deck and call it a day. You don't need to do anything else. So that's the main message, right? And Scabs is still the best card in Quest Rogue, if you're wondering. Scabs was not overhyped. The card is nuts.
Yeah.
So, but let's talk about the messy rogue deck, right? The one that people are trying to figure out, the Thief Rogue, the Burger Rogue, this deck.
It's Maestra Rogue, right? Like, it's, we use Maestra to discount Gnolls, and then the other stuff that we do is ambiguous right now. There are a bunch of different directions.
No, it's Thief Rogue. You want to play a lot of cards that generate cards from other classes. So it is the Burger archetype. It does happen to play Maestra because of the interaction with Null. This deck is a mess. Is messy.
Is a Mestra. Eh?
Yes, it is a Mestra. Yeah, I would say that. There are a lot of builds. Tons of builds. Some of them are running like Seraphine. This card is absolute garbage. Take it out of your decks, please. I'm begging you.
No, it's overpowered, and please nerf it, and also I opened a golden one. Please nerf it.
It's horrendous, Hat. I'm sorry
it's
to
so
say
bad.
It. The card
I
is
know.
Horrendous.
I know.
It's detrimental to your deck. I don't understand why this card was even printed with this effect. It's just so bad. It's like, if this was the build around, then awful. However, Stash is okay. Stash is a playable, competitive card, maybe. If this deck ends up being competitive, then Stash would be competitive with it. The question is Thief Rogue actually competitive? And it's tough to say. There's so many different builds. A lot of them, most of them are garbage. However, I do see some promise with the secret variants. If you're running Hanar, Stunners, that kind of package, then maybe this deck gets closer to like maybe high tier 3, maybe 50% win rate mark, maybe somewhere around that mark, but looks more competitive. The stunners, I don't think I need to explain, very good against Paladin as well. This deck functions pretty well against the Paladin class in general, especially if you run stunners. You're able to outpace opponents with Gnolls. You can get the Gnolls down to zero mana very, very quickly. But yeah, if I wanted to explore a direction that I think is more promising than others, it's the secret package direction.
And Hanar with Contraband Stash as well, like, it can really work well.
It helps you get your more value off of your stash in value that is directed value rather than random value, because it's value that you discover. Like, Reconnaissance is an excellent card in this deck because you get to choose what to play. You can play a high value Death Rattle and then replay it with Contraband Stash. I played this deck a bit. I actually played the non-secret version, but I was really curious about this deck and I was trying to play it, and like, you can get, like, I got a Rattlegore and I replayed it with Contraband Stash and just win games like that. If you can get targeted value that can get replayed by stash, it's very valuable. And Anar is the same story, right? One Thief is the same story. You can get a mage spell that's worth replaying with stash. So non-random generated stuff is like Swashburglar. Not a fan. You have to run it because it discounts Gnolls and stuff, but it's not great with stash, right? But Reconnaissance and Anar are very good with stash. So try it out. Just take out Seraphine. Like, card is a waste of time. Drawing it is like drawing Baku in your Baku deck. It's that bad.
You know why that's one of the more popular Thief Row builds right now? Because it's a Tice deck.
Oh, it is? We've got another Tice deck.
The Seraphine deck is the Tice list, yes. He was playing it on stream.
Okay. So somebody tell Tice to take out Seraphine so people do not craft it and waste their time. Card is horrendous. Horrendous. It is worth... You're better off drawing Maestra than drawing Seraphine. You're better off drawing a 2-mana 3-2 than Seraphine. Just to tell you how bad it is. In any case. So Thief Road could be, maybe, competitive with the secret package. But, you know, we'll try to figure out in the report. But this is kind of the direction. So it's just a new deck that people are playing a lot of garbage cards in, which drags the win rate down. But again, it could be maybe it's just not as good as Quest Rogue and Garrote Rogue. Probably. And the question is whether it's competitive enough. So that's the story for Rogue, I would say. Much else. I don't see much else elsewhere. Old decks, put scabs in. New decks, try to figure out secret package in Thief Rogue. And maybe that's good enough.
Not a bad place for a class to be if a few old decks work with a couple new cards, and then a new deck, newish deck, might have a chance. That's okay. And we actually have a somewhat similar story for Shaman, where there is a new deck that's very promising, and then a couple older builds that seem to be getting a little update with a couple newer cards. We should talk about Free Shaman, because it's not a meme this time.
There's more than one new deck in Shaman Hat.
There is.
Yeah, there is more than one new deck. Shaman has been revitalized. Definitely got the best set of this expansion.
Yeah,
I don't think there's any doubt about that. Initially, this is another situation where Free Shaman, first builds weren't so hot because it was theorycrafted stuff and people experimented. It's an entirely new archetype. It's an entirely new meta. You don't know what cards are best against this or that opponent. It's very hard to figure out what do you want to do with this archetype. So initially, it didn't look so hot. And it's still, some of its builds don't look so hot. That takes down the aggregated win rate. However, when I identify the best Free Shaman builds, they are very promising. They could be tier 1 potential. They could be very, very strong. So Free Shaman is looking very good if you ignore all the noise from the experimentation. For example, like I'll give you an example. Custodian bait. Don't play Custodian. Play Gavel, but you don't need Custodian to draw your gavels. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of deck slots. You don't need it. Vipers. Very good right now. You have a bad matchup against Warlock if you don't run Vipers. But if you run double Viper, yes, I'm saying double Viper, then your matchup against Paladin gets better. Your matchup against Warlock gets better. Turns out those are two of the most popular classes in the format. So it actually pays off to run Vipers. Right? Over like Harpies, for example. Because Garrote Rogue is not very common. Mutinous is a good card in the current meta. You run Mutinous. Play it against Warlock. Replay it with Macaw. You start eating all of your opponent's minions. You are very likely to hit their owl or their Tamsin. Once you hit Tamsin, you know, you eat an owl. I've done that. The game is over. If you eat Tamsin, their reach isn't as hard. Like if you flood the board, if you put stuff on the board, it makes it hard for them to OTK you. And especially, you know, when you're also vipering their rods and such. So there is game.
Yeah. I was playing against Mozaki Mage on ladder, and I played a Mutinous and I missed, and then my opponent went Refreshing Spring Water and Refresh Zero Crystals. Boulder Macaw, goodbye Mozaki.
Yeah. Like, Mutinous, because of its interaction with its synergy with Macaw, is not like a blind hit. It is not very blind. You're actually very consistent. And if your opponent is super passive and gives you time to do that, you can destroy some of the combo decks. You have some game against them thanks to Mutinous and Macaw. So that's two things that I've mentioned. Another thing, Devolving Missiles. Please play Devolving Missiles in your Shaman deck. The card is nuts right now. Do I really need to explain why Devolving Missiles is super important? So there are all sorts of adjustments that you can make in your Shaman deck that makes this archetype look a lot better. And I'm saying this again, this archetype looks as good as Owl Warlock, maybe not Paladin, but looks very strong if you build it perfectly, which we'll figure out. And I'm already seeing enough data for Free Shaman to figure out a direction. So these are the notes that, you know, you can keep in mind, like Custodian Bait, Mutinous very good right now. Viper's very good right now. Devolving Missile's very good right now, and such. Also, Battlemaster, very good card in this deck. It gives you reach and finishing potential. You've got your 3-4 freeze elementals and Chidi Snowballed on the board, and you suddenly Battlemaster does so much damage. Also, Battlemaster works fantastically with Snowfall Guardian. Right, this is one of the most powerful things that this deck can do. Lock out board-centric decks out of the game with Snowfall Guardian and Macaw. You develop giant minions over two turns, and then you just get them with Battlemaster and kill them.
It's happened to me so many times where, like, they just go Snowfall, and then the next turn they either play second Snowfall or Macaw, and it's very important, don't attack with the first Snowfall before. You want it to unfreeze that turn, then the following turn you play Battlemaster and the game is just over.
Yeah, you just win that way. You just completely cheat decks that develop board by just playing Guardian, Macaw. Again, don't attack with the Guardian. Freeze it, get that attack off, taken away on that turn to set up the Battlemaster follow-up. And then you can Battlemaster the next turn for like 30. You can just kill them. So Battlemaster is very good in that deck as well. I might tweet some of the deck that that I've played over the last few days just to give you guys an impression of what I was experimenting with and what I succeeded with. Like what decks seemed strong to me.
That'd be fun. I like tweets.
Yeah. So in any case, Free Shaman, again, once you figure out the build, the deck is very powerful and can have game against like a matchup like Warlock where it normally doesn't perform well in. And also, if Garrote Rogue ever becomes popular, you probably just put Harpies up and you have a plan where you play Harpy and then like Bolner Harpy Macaw and just gain 20 and good luck, Rogue, trying to combo me down. So there's definitely some stuff that you can do. In any case, that's Free Shaman. But there's also another deck called Bolner Shaman.
Oh, the Yashiraj combo.
Combo. Yes.
Yeah, I Yashiraj think Bolner combo, OTK.
For the first time, Hart, this combo actually looks viable. This deck has always like this finisher has always been somewhat of a meme, but now it actually looks playable. Like you're playing a control shaman deck, you're playing armor vendors, right? You're playing a defensive deck, and then at the end game, you have Bolner, Bloom, Yashiraj, get the corrupted circus medics and dunk tanks off, hit the dunk tanks in the face, play the circus medic. The circus medic doubles up Yashiraj, battle cry, you get more circus medics and dunk tanks in your hand, and you just have infinite near infinite damage in theory, definitely over 30, definitely enough to kill most opponents. So that deck seems to work. Again, you run like Muteness, you run like Lurker Below, you run Snowfall Guardian just because of the freeze, because it's so powerful as a stalling tool, and this deck definitely has game. I think Wire popularized the build of the Bolner OTK Shaman.
He's been playing it all week, yeah. He's had a few updates, but yeah, the most recent, he's top 25 with the most recent list.
Yeah, this deck is definitely competitive. It seems worse than Free Shaman because you don't have the proactive early game that the Free Shaman has. So your ability to pressure some of the opponents where you need to act as the beatdown can be problematic, but the deck looks very good. Looks competitive. I would say maybe tier 2, somewhere around 50% win rate mark. So it's definitely playable, and it's an entirely new archetype. I think people are not paying attention enough to this deck. But Shaman has more. Shaman has is super diverse. Obviously, you've got some of the older decks, the Elemental Shaman running a freeze package. Also seems to be working pretty well. People are running more Doomhammer lately just because they want to kill the Warlocks. You know, they're running like Neophytes and stuff like that. Not sure what the best build is, but Elemental Shaman is perfectly fine. Looks perfectly competitive. Looks quite good. I would say underrated, which is expected, right? It's not going to be played much because it's not entirely new when the class has new things to play with, like a Bolner Free Shaman sounds more exciting than just an Elemental Shaman with some freeze spells. But Elemental Shaman is doing work, and Quest Shaman is also doing quite a bit of work. This deck, I think you've been playing it, Hat. This deck is quite good with the freeze package. Looks very good. The Wind Chills and the Sleet Breakers, Quest Shaman, Hat.
Oh, yeah. Pizza was playing a list. And I was trying it out, and still good.
He was playing the Theorcrafting list from our website. That's what he was playing.
So Pizza was playing the VS list. I was playing the Pizza list, so I was playing the VS list. Yes, I have been playing Vicious Syndicate Quest Shaman. It's been very good.
Yeah. So this deck works pretty well. You know, the multicasters get to the point where they're quite insane.
That card's sometimes so you just nuts draw now four in Shaman. Cards. Sometimes, so good, yeah.
Yeah, Multicaster is very good. So Quest Shaman is also looking strong, looking stronger than it did towards the end of Stormwind, that's for sure. So I would say Shaman has four very good decks. Some of them, at least a couple of them, don't see much play, don't see much fanfare. But Shaman has been completely revitalized by this Alterac set, and it looks quite good. So yeah, so for those saying, I saw rumblings of like all the new decks are bad and stuff like that. No. Once you figure out some of these new decks like Freeze Shaman, like Bolner, then yeah, these decks are good and very competitive with the old decks.
Yep, there's new strategies, but you know, these things take a minute. So we got to give it a minute, and I'm not surprised that it's taken a little while, but yeah, having played a bunch of the newer strategies in Rogue and Shaman this past week, it feels pretty fresh and pretty different. And, you know, who could have seen that Windchill was good? Exactly as advertised. Yeah, but Windchill, Snowfall Guardian, I definitely underestimated. Wildpaw Cavern, I really underestimated.
Wildpaw Cavern is insane. Sometimes you just bloom it out and just win.
Yeah.
Like, I've done that. I've played Free Shaman. Again, I've played Free Shaman with double Viper Mutinous. I figure out this is the package you want to run if you want to beat Orlok. And but sometimes you just bloom out a Caverns and you follow up with Snowbolt and the game can be over on like turn 5. Like sometimes the deck can just completely demolish opponents very early on just because of an early Caverns. So Caverns, I think we gave it a 4 in the review, in the preview. So that seems correct. Guardian may have underestimated it. That this card looks like a 4.
This card looks like a 10-10. That's what this looks like. It's so good. Yeah.
So good.
It's
so
strong. I've been playing a good bit of Deathrattle Demon Hunter, which we'll talk about much later in the episode. But let me say that Free Shaman might be my least favorite matchup to play against, because if I go too wide, then I can't play anything and I'm dead to 10-10s. Or they have an early Caverns and then they freeze my face, and Deathrattle Demon Hunter with Kurtress really likes attacking. When I can't do that, I'm not happy. So, yeah, it's not a matchup that I really enjoy playing.
Are you saying, Hat, that we have to play removal in our Hearthstone decks again? How dare they?
I play opponent removal. I hit them in the face and then they go away. Why are they slowing me down?
How dare Team 5 promote removal in Hearthstone? How could they? Anyway.
The promise of a slower meta may very well be true, but we have some other stuff going on, including one of your favorite decks, the expansion in Druid, Zach. You want to talk about it?
One of my favorite decks. Yeah, let's talk about my... Before that, let's talk about some of the established Druid decks. So, Celestial Druid, is it bugged? Was there... Like, I heard...
It was bugged for a couple days. It's fixed now.
They fixed it now. Okay, so that makes sense. So, Celestial Druid looks quite good. I would say it looks better than it did during Stormwind. It's a strong counter to Alt-TK Warlock. So that's not a huge surprise. It performs better at high levels because at like top legend, a lot of people are playing like combo-y stuff. Not a lot of aggro over there. But even through the rest of ladder, there's not much of the hyper-aggressive decks. And that's good news for Celestial Druid because it doesn't want to face those matchups. So if it sees less of them, then that's good news. I think that Fino kind of iterated on it. You just add Guff, which is, turns out, hero cards are good, Hat.
Who could have seen that coming?
Yeah, and you play Lokalar. Is that how you pronounce it? The Ice Lord?
Yes, the 8-8 Rush Wind Fury. Yeah.
Yeah, it works really well in a Celestial Lyman deck. Turns out that card is good when you can play it for one mana. So, Celestial Druid is fine. The Jerry Rig Mr. Smite iteration is where you want to go with it. If you're not seeing a lot of aggressive decks, it's very good. If you want to counter really hard, counter the Alt-TK Warlock, then that's the way to do it. Like 75-25 matchup, something like that. Just pay attention to Rod. If they have Rod equipped, then playing Celestial Alignment can lead to some weird results, some undesired results. But
it can
otherwise,
lead to you being dead.
Yes, but mostly the matchup is pretty oppressive. So it's a good counter to that. But again, you know, if there's some aggressive decks, things like people playing Trogs against you on turn 1, if you don't have the Lunar Eclipse, you're pretty much dead. So Celestial Druid looks good right now because of the focus on countering Warlock. But if the meta shifts a little bit away from Warlock and towards Paladin, then it's going to run into troubles. But right now, it looks like a pretty good deck. But again, it's early in the meta. We'll see. Tondruid. What do we want to do with Tondruid? Turns out, when it comes to Tondruid, when it comes to Razormane Battleguard,
Fitting the beast package doesn't seem worth it. You're better off just doing what we iterated in the theorycrafting article, which is just put Trogs and Mark of the Wild and go from there. That direction is probably the strongest one. Trog is very good in the deck. Drakthar is very good in the deck. Still, best card in the deck by some distance. So you can do pretty well with Tondroid, though. I would say it's weaker compared to its days in Stormwind, just because there's, a lot of new defensive tools in the format that makes it difficult for this deck to really, really thrive. It has issues with Warlock and their removal. The thing about Altk Warlock, the thing about the Among Us deck, is that since you don't run Quest on one, your mulligan is way more consistent than just finding the rest of the cards in your deck. You're starting with one extra card, and that means you're more likely to find things like Morgue Artificer, Full-Blown Evil, or Morgue Artificer into Skull Spirits, or just generally Drained Soul, or finding that Touch of the Nathrezim against that Razormane Battle Guard. So Druid kind of has difficulty attacking Warlock through the board because of that removal toolkit and the extra consistency with not having to play Quest on one.
The deck also does not have to deal itself 24 damage, which is pretty good in the aggressive matchups.
Yeah. Does need to deal so much damage to itself. So, yeah, it gives it some edge in the aggressive matchups compared to the Fatigue Warlock. Even though Fatigue Warlock is fine in aggressive matchups, the Owl build does even better. So the Beast package, though, again, this is very preliminary. Maybe there is a dedicated Beast deck that even takes off Razormane Battle Guard and just runs Beasts with Oracle Valoon, just to have the Oracle Valoon Matriarch combo. This deck could be competitive, but it has to take away. It has to take out the Battle Guard package. It has to take out the early Taunt package, just because there's too many deck slots to fit all of these pieces together. You'd have to make a different deck. You have to give up the turn 2 Battle Guard, and you have to fill your deck with Beasts in order to make Matriarch Alone, Oracle Valoon work. But the good news is that maybe this direction is actually strong, and maybe you can actually take out Battle Guard and make a new deck, a Beastroid deck, that's a little higher on the curve. It's not running like Drakthar and three drops or less. I've even seen Moonfang being ran in that build. So there might be something there, but it's too, like, I can't really see enough of it to say. But Matriarch could become meta if there is more attention given to that direction. Take away the Battle Guard, just build a new deck, put Beasts in your deck, put all the Beast Synergy cards and try to make that work. That could be a thing. And then we have another Druid deck that's reasonably popular, and that's my favorite Druid deck, Sarcasm. The Drakthar full spell Druid that just runs Guff and either Blademasters or Trogs. And just plays Drakthar. So the Drakthar summons a Trog and Guff often. And then you just go off with spells and you buff your Trog out of removal range. And that's a lot of fun. Like, basically, Barnes turn 4, game ends before it even begins.
The deck plays Capture Coldtooth Mine and no other 4 drops.
The deck tops out at Drakthar. You don't even play Arbor Up. So that Coldtooth Mine always finds your Drakthar. So you can consistently play Drakthar on 4 and get that silly combo off. The good news for everyone who wants to play a real Hearthstone game is that this deck sucks. It sucks. Yes, the Drakthar is super toxic and can lead to non-games, but the deck sucks, and I will enjoy continuing to say that this deck sucks and you shouldn't play it, because this deck needs to disappear off the face of the planet. It just doesn't, like, the thing is, without Drakthar, this deck just has no game whatsoever. Like, you're highly reliant on winning through the Drekthar turn. You can do it. You can get the Drekthar turn very consistently on turn four. But decks will have answer. Like you're playing against Shaman, Devolving Missiles. Game over. That's it. You have no game after it. You have no Arbor up. You have a bunch of spells that maybe you can summon a board with and somehow win with Sow the Soil because that's kind of your finisher. But that's not good enough, right? So that doesn't carry you over the line in most matchups. So if you don't win with Drekthar, you just can't win. And the deck just doesn't get enough wins off of Drekthar absurdity to really become competitive. And this deck looks tier 4 and is not going to last. So if you have ever been triggered over the last few days by this deck, ease your mind. This deck is not going to last.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of like of sketchy information for Lone Shark, Rogue, of just it's purpose built to do this one thing and it's not even that good, but when it wins it feels so icky. But it's built so low to the ground, but it doesn't do anything for a few turns, and then it just has the one pop off, and then either you can deal with it and you win, or you can't and you die, and that's it. It's don't love the play pattern at all, but yeah, I have seen less and less of this has gone on, and it's been easier and easier to deal with it as the other decks around has gotten better.
Yeah, I was concerned. Like Drekthar is a card that looks very powerful in aggressive strategies. But I was concerned with this exact situation where you're playing a spell-heavy deck and like a Secret Hunter or a Druid, and you just make a Drekthar deck. And Drekthar becomes Barnes 2.0.
Yeah, Barnes for Yashiraj and Hunter.
Eventually, I think that's going to happen, and it will force Drekthar to be nerfed just because of this interaction. Because eventually, over the next year, there will be a situation probably where Drekthar becomes this toxic card that actually is gets into a competitive deck and it works. And that's just means that it has to be nerfed. But we are not there at the moment. But it could change in a week, in 2 weeks, in 2 months, in 4 months. I don't know. But this is definitely not something you want to see that becomes prevalent. So far, the experimentation has not panned out. But eventually it's going to happen.
Well, all right. And that's half the classes. And it feels like much more than half the meta. But, you know, there's still some stuff going on in these others. We should talk about Hunter. What's going on with Hunter? I know that there's been some, like, beast experimentation. And also, first couple days I saw people just put Drog in Face Hunter, which seemed strong, but I haven't seen very much Face Hunter.
Yeah, Face Hunter is good. Face Hunter is definitely strong. You can just put your Trogs in your Face Hunter. Pretty much take the VS list and just play it. It works pretty well. There's some argument to run Bloodseeker. I can definitely see it. It's not like Bloodseeker doesn't belong in Face Hunter. It's just I'm just wondering about like the other slot. You have to take out things like Piercing Shot. People have been taking out Ringling Rifle. That's definitely wrong.
No way. No, not after they print Ice Trap. That's terrible.
Yeah. No, it's just like just an example of how experimentation can really hurt a deck's win rate. Like there are builds. There's a common build that takes out Ringling Rifle. Ringling Rifle is literally this deck's best card. You have to run it. So it's not worth running Bloodseeker over Ringling Rifle. Now, maybe we run one Bloodseeker, one Ringling Rifle. Maybe we do something like that. But if the notion of I want to run Bloodseeker and it's awkward with Ringling Rifle, so I'm going to take out Ringling Rifle to fitting Bloodseeker, no, that's not the direction. So if I have to make a choice between the two weapons, it's Ringling Rifle every time. Every single time.
It does not seem particularly close.
Yeah. So if you want to do well with Face Hunter for now, just take the VS Theorcrafted list. It's not even a Theorcrafted list. It just take out the Wound Prey from the Stormwind build and put in Trogs and you're good to go. This deck is good, though, again, it's not dominant. I wouldn't say it's nowhere near as dominant as it was during Stormwind, where it was just the best deck, even top legend, it performed so well. I think it's one of the better decks. It's doing well, but it's not super, it's not super strong, but you can definitely do a lot of work with Face Hunter. Other Hunter decks, have we seen anything that looks remotely competitive? Quest Hunter, maybe, but maybe probably not really. But is the Beast deck, the Mountain Bear deck, is that promising? Again, very questionable. I'm honestly not too sure. It could be maybe you improve it a little bit through refinement. But I'm seeing a deck that is kind of tier 4-ish, and maybe if you improve it a little bit, then maybe it's very low a tier 3, but that's like...
You're being so diplomatic right now, and I appreciate that you're doing that. It's better than Death Rattle Hunter has been the previous two expansions.
Because I'm seeing a direction, I know, like aggregated win rate, it sucks. But there is some direction that maybe this deck doesn't suck as much. And like there's a high variance of win rates, right? And the builds that perform best could be tier 3. But considering it's early in the meta and the meta is only going to be more competitive and ruthless, maybe I am being diplomatic. Maybe this deck just sucks and it's just not going to work out. We're going to have another expansion of just Face Hunter or nothing. But just because it's like 5 days in, you know, who knows? But I wouldn't hold my breath, right? I would not hold my breath for another Hunter.
There have been games I played
deck.
With it where like the pack tactics hits the Mountain Bear and your opponent gives up and you're like, okay, there might be something here. But just generally what I've seen with how the format is going and just seeing the amount of devolving missiles running around, I don't know. I don't have a lot of faith in things lining up all that well here. Even if the cards are more synergistic than what we've had before, even if there's some good stuff here with Battle Ram. You know, I had a game on the first day that I played, did my 3x a year launch day stream. Coin Battle Ram on 3, Battle Ram on 4, Crush on 5, Double Revive Pet on 6. Awesome. But that's once in a blue moon, and generally when I'm playing the deck, just feels like other people are doing stuff that works better quicker than my stuff.
Okay, so I'm going to point people to the right direction of this deck, and it's going to sound weird, but I'm going to point people to the right direction if this deck ever competes. And it's going to sound weird, Hat, but I'm going to name a few cards.
Oh boy.
Vandar, Imported Tarantula, Wing Commander, Ickman.
You know, I was expecting not those cards. I was expecting different cards. Yeah. It's this.
Yeah.
So is this?
There's a build that runs Vandar into like Tarantula Teacher's Pet and tops out at Crush.
It runs Guardian Animals.
Yeah, that's probably the way that maybe this deck can compete. You run Guardian Animals. This is the direction that you may want to go for. But even this direction probably isn't good enough. Probably. But maybe. Wing Commander is actually good in that deck.
I don't believe you. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm saying I just cannot possibly believe that's true.
What if I told you it's the best card in a deck?
I eagerly await waking up from this dream.
It's as good as Tavish in this deck. That's what all I can say.
Well.
But yeah, probably not enough. But it's kind of like that's the direction. Like people are running like the Selective Breeder stuff. No, don't waste your time. Wrangler, Selective Breeder. No. You want Vandar.
Just play Scamdar. Good old Scamdar. All right. Well, That's a lot of new information. Didn't expect that. Guess we'll see if anyone can figure that list out. But we have a different kind of hunter. We have a Demon Hunter. And, you know, it's Death Rattle Demon Hunter. I've actually seen quite a bit of, been playing quite a bit of. Kurtress is a good card.
Yeah, Kurt Russell is a good card, turns out.
He is. Good at basketball, too.
Anyway, Demon Hunter. Demon Hunter fractures as ever. Lots of different things that people are experimenting with. I would say the strongest deck so far is Death Rattle Demon Hunter. Again, it's a old deck that just needed to adjust a few cards, and it makes things easier, right? People are running like Piggyback Imp, probably the sleeper card. I was thinking about this card in Death Rattle Demon Hunter, but I thought, probably it's not good enough. But turns out it's probably good enough. And then you just top out at like Expendables and Urzul Giant, and that works pretty well. Alongside the Curtis, and you've got the Fellfire Deadeye, so you've got a lot of reach, a very strong win condition towards the very end of the game. So this approach looks good.
Yeah, and there are a few different builds that are floating around. The Inquisitors are a little bit too heavy right now. I do like the Giants. Den has been experimenting with cutting both of those and instead is moving towards Felsteel Executioner and Mr. Smite.
I think you want your Giants, depending on what kind of Giants. Do you want them to be Inquisitor? Do you want to be them the Urzul Giants? I think I like the Urzul Giant direction better. Because it just works better with Expendables. It works better. Like, there's more synergy with your hero card, with Kurtris. So I can definitely see that deck transpiring to be competitive. It already looks pretty decent right now. We'll see what ends up when the meta settles down, becomes more efficient, becomes more worthless, whether this deck can stand that test. But this is probably the most promising direction for Demon Hunter right now. The stuff that's not figured out, that's not as figured out, is the stuff that performs worse. But again, like a dedicated token druid deck, token Demon Hunter deck, could definitely be a thing. There's just a lot of experimentation that hasn't really panned out. Like the things that kind of like our builds, like the build that we have in Etherocrafting with like Sigil of Summoning and Ramp Commanders and that stuff, not so much. You probably still always want to sprinkle in a Death Rattle package. You probably still want to run like Razor Boar and Beastmaster, but keep the package smaller and then dedicate more slots towards like token synergies. With things like the Vanguard, the Feast of Souls, that kind of stuff, and then just top out with the Urzul Giants. So that could be a thing. But again, it's like it's Death Rattle Demon Hunter, and then there's like a package of Death Rattles with more of the token stuff that seems to work out better. Aggro Demon Hunter not working out very well. Big Demon Hunter, probably not quite good enough. Though again, there's a question of what do we put at the top end? What do we want to run? What kind of demons do we want to run? It's all kind of a little bit in the air, but even then, even once it's figured out, I'm not sure it's quite good enough to be competitive. Just because it's very, how do I say it? I don't know if it's not consistent. You can pretty consistently get your Sigil of Reckoning off, and that can be a powerful thing. The thing is that it's kind of the only powerful thing that you do. And the other pieces in the deck don't really do powerful enough things. So Big Demon Hunter might not be quite good enough. And then, you know, there's Lifesteal Demon Hunter. And Lifesteal Demon Hunter, I expect it to get better as time goes on, especially a top legend if people start playing more Garrote Rogue, then you're going to have the normal niche of this deck being the Garrote counter. It's also very good against Owl Warlock. It's an oppressive matchup, hard counter. You know, the glides, and I don't need to, like, whatever hard counters Fatigue Warlock tends to counter Owl Warlock pretty badly as well. So that's it pretty much, really. The problem with Demon Hunter is that it's fractured in a lot of archetypes, and I don't have the best sample for every archetype out there. So I can't really comment too much about card choices, but that's what it's looking to be. For me, it seems like Death Rattle and Lifesteal, which are the established decks, adding a few good cards are the ones that perform well. The token Demon Hunter hasn't really figured itself out yet, needs to be refined more. Maybe it gets to that level. But other things like Big Demon Hunter not too hopeful in that direction.
Yeah. And I am actually happy to say, haven't seen anyone try Proving Grounds again, which is good because that was garbage and get out of my game.
Yeah, Sigil is just so much better. Sigil is nutty. It's a nutty card, in a bad deck right now.
Yep. I'm sure we'll hear about it again. All right. Priest time. What do we got here? Got some Blessed Priests, some Miracles, we got some Quest Priests, we got some Death Rattles. What's going on? Is there a deck here?
Priest seems to be this class that has multiple decks, and they're all like on the fringes of Tier 3, Tier 4. And I'm just wondering if one of them can push over the top. I think there is one, Miracle Priest. For me, that's the most promising deck. You probably want to run Trogs.
Oh, for sure.
I will say this right now. You probably want to run Trogs in your Miracle Priest. I mean, you're running Rally anyway, and you don't normally run one drop, so having the Rally res the Trog can be useful. I know that it kind of disrupts your insights, like playing insight and drawing the Trog isn't the best, but it's worth it. Trog is just good. Just put it in your deck. Your deck has a lot of buffs and you can just completely lock out games with Trog. So if you run Trog, I think this deck has game and can potentially be good enough to be competitive. So that's the most promising thing. You know, the big Death Rattle Priest with like Vandar and such. Again, it looks like on the fringes of the meta. But considering that we expect that win rates across the board are going to deflate. Because right now we're in the super janky early expansion meta where there are a lot of bad decks are there and it's easier to pick up wins. So if this deck is on the fringes of tier 4 or tier 3 right now, then that doesn't bode well for its future, right? Because things are only going to get more difficult. And I don't know if there's a way, if this deck is flexible enough to make adjustments that make it good enough, because you're kind of skewed towards the Vandar build. What else are you going to do? So there's not much you can improve in like the VS Theorcrafted list that we have. That's probably the best direction to go with. But other than that, there's no flexibility to really do well enough against like an adjusted meta. So I'm not a big fan. Quest Priest kind of similar, like you're very locked in to a certain curve, so there's no flexibility. I mean, Priest has the advantage where it can run Silence, right? Shard of the Narrow is very good against Trogs, so maybe one of the adjustments you make in these Priest builds is just run Shard of the Narrow, and that helps you against some of the decks in the format that try to cheese you with Trogs. But other than that weapon that Priest has in its toolkit, I'm just not seeing enough of an intimidating late game to compete with other late games that we see in the format. It's just that Priest has the issue that we were concerned with, where, yeah, you can grind decks to dust, you can last forever, but the meta doesn't give you the time to go forever. So that's kind of my concern. But the Miracle Priest goes off early, so that gives it a better chance to compete with these decks, which is why I'm kind of seeing more promise there. And when it comes to the aggressive Blast Priest, Rally Priest, probably not the direction you want to go with. Just because you don't have, like, Miracle Priest is more flexible. You can actually buy some turns. You have more longevity with Blessed Priest. You're very, like the aggro priest, you're very reliant on just hitting your curve and blowing out the opponent early. And that doesn't seem to be a solid enough plan.
It's I'm gonna give a slightly different answer. The main reason I wouldn't play aggro Blessed Priest is because of the win rate. That's just the main thing holding me back.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just explaining why the win rate is low. It's too low. It's because the game plan of just blowing out opponents on turn 2-3 is just not consistent enough and doesn't get you enough, because you have to stay on the board for the whole game. That's the problem of, like, if you're not Shadow Priest, right, you don't have reach, you don't have a damaging hero power. So even, like, your opponents can stabilize against you on 5 life, you can be at 2 life even. And if you don't have a board, you don't have ways of dealing damage. So yeah, that's the big problem. Like, you're playing against Shaman and you can get a 6-6 on turn two and they just win chill. Or you flood the board and they just Guardian and freeze your whole board and they do it again with Macaw and you're dead the next turn. Right? So this Warlock has billion removal, right? Artificer wrecks you. So it's kind of, even though that's one of your, like, that's a matchup that you can actually do well in, it's not even enough. Like, you don't have enough of an edge to make all the bad stuff that you run into in the meta, like, worth it.
Priest is, I wonder if any of these strategies will get there, but I don't think Priest is the worst class. Because it's time to talk about Mage, Zach. Is Big Spell Mage real? Is it real?
Mage is the worst class? That's an interesting take, Hat.
You don't think so?
I mean, maybe Mage has the worst deck in the format in Big Spell Mage. Maybe that is an argument for the worst deck in the format. Because, yeah, Big Spell Mage did not pan out anywhere near competitive.
I guess there is. I mean, there is. You're right. There is a mage deck that's actually been doing. But been playing there is a mage deck that's doing quite well. Work, yeah,
respectable work, and that's Mozaki Mage. Mozaki Mage, you know, Siphon Mana is an insane card in this deck. It's a big boost for this deck specifically because it wants to go off in one turn and have a lot of cheap spells to go alongside. In a way, it's stronger in this deck than it is in Quest Mage. Even though it's strong in both of these archetypes, theoretically, Siphon Mana is huge for Mozaki Mage. So Mozaki Mage is looking better than it did during Stormwind. Some of it you may attribute it to just the meta being less efficient, less punishing. But it's also about the Warlock matchup. It's good against Warlocks. It's an effective answer against them. It's decent enough against Paladins too. Like, if they don't have a Trog, then you definitely have a game against them. You can definitely punish them. It's pretty good against Freeze Shaman again, because you're board centric and the Mozaki Mage can stall enough and go off early enough for the Freeze Shaman not to have enough pressure to put it away. So it's got some decent matchups. Obviously, it's got some bad matchups. Like, it doesn't want to run into Facehunter. It doesn't want to run into the more aggressive Paladin list. It doesn't want to run into Garrote Rogue. But there's quite enough to do. There's quite enough matchups out there that are good enough for Mozaki Mage to look respectable. And when I say respectable, I would say it's close to 50% win rate mark at most ladder rank brackets. Maybe it's a little under that mark, but it seems reasonable enough. Maybe it gets worse over time. Maybe Warlocks decline. But if they don't, then Mozaki Mage has a place.
And I guess it's better than every Priest deck. So, sorry, Priest, you might still be the worst class in the game.
Yeah, I think Priest right now. But again, Miracle Priest, I think, could be competitive. Definitely has a good chance based on what I'm seeing right now. So, I don't think that there will be a dead class. There might be a couple of classes with decks that aren't amazing, right? But they're good enough. So yeah, Mozaki's fine. Quest Mage, not very good. Quest Mage is kind of a waste of time. If you want to play Mage, you want to play the Spell Mage archetype, you better get your high skill cap hats ready because you're going to have to play Mozaki.
And Big Spell Mage
is really bad. Do I need to say anything else about this deck? Nothing about this deck works well together. Like, I don't understand this deck. Like, Dawngrass does not repeat things that you play off of Iceblood.
It's not really a deck. It's not really a deck.
It doesn't repeat things that you play off of Career. So there's anti-synergy within itself. It just doesn't, like, the whole deck just doesn't function.
I was looking at stats early on in the expansion, and I saw Big Spell Mage ranked as worse than Boar Rogue. What happened?
I mean, yeah. Is it worse than Boar Rogue? I don't think it's worse than Boar Rogue. I think Boar Rogue is actually worse. No, it's in the ballpark.
Yeah.
But it's in the ballpark of Boar Rogue. That's all you need to know. right? Its win rate is not even 40%. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's really something.
But there's actually another class.
There is another class. The reason
why we left it last is because, well, it's kind of one-dimensional in the sense of, like, warrior, just like what we said about priest, there's so much lethality in the format that classes that have their late game strategies rely on removing and sustaining are just not going to fly. So when you look at control warrior, like, even if you run, like, Galvanjar, which is cool, right? The Vandar thing, it's cool. It's too slow compared to things like Owl Warlock. It's even too slow compared to things like Bolnir Shaman. So you don't really have a way to compete in the late game. And aggressive decks are just not prevalent enough for that to be, for your removal toolkit to matter. So when you look at all the slow warrior strategies, they're all a bunch of garbage. They don't look playable at all. So the only playable deck within Warrior is Quest Warrior. And Quest Warrior doesn't play any new cards, right? Quest Warrior is doing very well, I think partly because the meta is so, like, janky and stuff, and this is the ultimate deck to punish that inefficiency, because this deck is... this is probably the most linear deck in the format, right? What are you doing? You're just playing pirates every turn, you get the quest reward, you win the game. That's pretty much all you do. Now, I will say, it's one of the decks that are performing the best right now on ladder. But as you climb ladder and you get to higher and higher ranks, this deck's win rate is dropping. It's just like it was during Stormwind. This deck has a very low skill ceiling, historically low, just because of the way that it plays out. So it can dominate Platinum, do very well in Platinum, but when it comes to its future prospects at, like, top Legend ladder, I think it's going to settle around Tier 2, maybe. It's going to look more reasonable. And it's not played much even at higher levels because, you know, it's just an old deck that doesn't even play any new cards. Not particularly interesting for these players to play with. So it's doing well. I expect its win rate to deflate over time. It has been deflating. Like, day one, Warrior had, like, the highest win rate by far. And now we're at day five and it's might be the fourth best class in terms of overall win rate. So there's just not much else to say. Control Warrior, dumpster. Just no chance in this meta.
It's not really a thing.
Yeah, Rokara is an insane card in a really unplayable archetype. That's the message.
I'm glad that she turned out to be decent. You were right that she was good in a controlling archetype. I maintain that she could be good in aggressive archetype if they ever print cards for it. Now is not the time. But she definitely works in control.
Yeah, she works in control, but you need to actually have minions on the board on turn 7 to get the armor off. So if the board meta is not board-centric, particularly board-centric, then she's just not relevant. And that was my the only chance that Rokara would not see play is if the only viable archetype in the format was Quest Warrior, and this is what ended up transpiring. So that's pretty much it for the meta right now. I expect to see more developments until Friday. So the report will be a very worthwhile read, and there is always new stuff. And sometimes things that I say in this podcast change by the time we publish the report because there are new developments. So don't take anything of what I've said in this podcast as gospel. Things could always change. I'm just giving you my early impressions of the first 5 days or so of the meta.
And speaking of things that could change, sometimes it's due to natural developments and sometimes it is due to imposed developments. We've talked about this and we're not sure when they're going to make balance changes. Usually they do it right before they leave for holiday break, which is the 25th, is Christmas. So The question is, will they be in the office the first couple of days next week or not? Will they aim for the end of this week? Because if they aim for their nerf window of Thursday the 16th, well, there's an issue of Worlds is on the 18th and 19th. So I don't know if they're getting nerfed 2 days before, and they can't really get a patch into the game faster.
I'm hoping that if they do decide to make balance changes, they only do it on the week of the 20th. Not only is it bad for Worlds, I think it just makes it unlikely for you to make a good decision at this point. The meta right now, I would say there's no... People are going to hate what I say. They always do when I say this, but there is no clear power outlier in the format right now that requires an emergency address, like emergency nerf, that this has to be nerfed right now. No, Owl Warlock is not oppressive. Yes, Paladin is very strong, but its win rate is slowing down a little bit. It might still end up being too strong, but it's just, we're too early in the meta. There's a lot of things that are developing, a lot of trends that are transpiring in unpredictable directions, and it's just things are too young. You can't really make informed decisions based on the data of the first few days of this expansion. So there's no clear emergency. We don't need to, like, if we had an emergency, it would be Drekthar, but the Druid deck is not good, so that should relax, and you're not going to see that experience too much.
And we've seen as well, we've seen when something is a 60% win rate out of the gate. We saw a Baron's Paladin. That was different than what we have now.
We don't see that. We don't see like a deck that just super highly oppressive to the point where it just chokes out everything. Like, Libran Paladin is the closest thing to like the perfect deck in the current format. But Libran Paladin still has some of its... still has vulnerabilities that I expect to see more of and rise in popularity. So really nerfing Libran Paladin would be seem very premature. So Warlock doesn't seem to be a problem, a power outlier at the moment. I don't think it's worth nerfing at this point in terms of, because of power reasons, that's for sure. Libran Paladin, not the case. Drekthar, not yet. We're not there yet. Iron Deep Trog. A lot of people want to nerf Iron Deep Trog. Iron Deep Trog is not even a power outlier in Paladin, where it's probably the strongest. And also, Iron Deep Trog is kind of important to keep a lot of these spell dense combo strategies in check. Like, if you nerf it right now, like, a lot of the good decks right now that perform well, you look, Celestial Druid is doing pretty well right now. You've got Lifesteal Demon Hunter could come back. You've got Mozaki Mage doing pretty well. You've got Garrote Rogue doing well. So you've got Owl Warlock doing well. So is now the time to nerf Iron Deep Trog? No, it is not the time to nerf Iron Deep Trog. Definitely not. And it's, again, it's not like, it's not even stronger than Attendant in Paladin. The reason why, as I said before, Libran Paladin is so good is because now it got another one drop to go alongside Attendant and is similar in power to it. And that makes it a little bit more consistent. That increases the consistency of the deck.
How quickly we forget the Discourse was asking for proactive disruption for quests. Here it is.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Here it is.
You got what you wanted. You got disruption for Spelden's decks, and now people want it to be nerfed. Relax, let Trog do its thing. If it ends up being a dominant force in the meta like 2 months from now or a month from now, and you can't get away with it, and it creates an abundance of non-games, then yeah, sure, nerf it then. But right now, there are plenty of answers to a Trog. Like, Shamans are not running enough Devolving Missiles. Silence Effect is good to kind of to play, and yes, maybe we need to run removal in the format now because of Iron Deep Trog. Oh no, don't make me run removal, Blizzard. Immediately nerf it. Come on, I really don't think there's any justification to nerf anything this early in the expansion for these particular reasons. Now, another thing I want to say, a lot of the combo strategies are doing quite well. I talked about them. And I expect to do well over time. Like Lifesteal Demon Hunter, I expect to fully come back. So you're going to see a meta with like Lifesteal Demon Hunter and Celestial Druid and Garrote Rogue and Mozaki Mage and Owl TK Warlock. And people say, oh, you know, the meta didn't slow down. Compared to Stormwind. I would even say, back then, you know, there was that narrative of solitaire meta. The meta right now is more solitaire than it was early in Stormwind. Some of it has to do with the fact that these decks, again, are old decks that needed to just add one, two new cards, and that's why they perform pretty well in the aggregated statistics. But when it comes to slowing down the meta, this is something that people don't really understand. You don't slow down metas. You cannot by adding new cards. You don't. Metas do not slow down with the addition of new cards. Metas can only increase the pace with the addition of more power and more new cards. Because if you have a strategy that kills people on turn 8, adding new cards, like unless some of these power cards just completely shout down this specific strategy, which they do not, and usually will not, then it's not going to slow down. You can do stuff to keep the pace and not get it any faster, which may be what we're going to see in this expansion. But the only way to slow things down is by balance changes or rotation. The slowest expansion in a year is usually the first one after a rotation because the power level drops. A lot of the cards that up the pace are rotated. There's less option to accelerate win conditions. And now another thing that I want to say. What do you do to nerf, let's say, these combo strategies that people rage about remain dominant or something or remain highly prevalent? What do you address? I'm looking at feedback about Owl Warlock and people saying, change the Owl Death Rattle to only hit minions, nerf Phylactery. This is nonsense. This is not how you nerf these strategies. If you nerf the Owl part of Owl Warlock, all you're going to see is the return of Fatigue Warlock, a deck that plays almost the same way. And it's not going to miss a beat. I guarantee it. Nerfing Owl will do nothing to make serious changes. You look at Celestial Druid. I'm going to name all these combo strategies. Celestial Druid, Mozaki Mage, Lifesteal Demon Hunter, Garrote Rogue, Owl Warlock. If you nerf it, Fatigue Warlock. What enables them? It's not the card draw. A lot of saying, like even you said in this podcast, Hat, we were talking about draw. Draw promotes combo. No. If the draw is fairly costed, you still need to spend mana to draw these cards. So you can inject an abundance of card draw. It's not necessarily going to make combo strategies lightning fast combo strategies. Maybe it makes combo strategies that kill you on turn 10 or turn 11. But that's not what's going to make combo strategies kill you on turn 8. It's not abundance of card draw. It's also not abundance of damage. The fact that you can deal 112 damage with Warlock is not what's offensive or could be considered offensive. It's the fact that you can do it on turn 8 and 9. And having an abundance of damage, it's not what allows these decks to do it on turn 8 and 9. What allows these decks to function, and notice all the 5 decks that I mentioned, all have one thing in common. They have global bulk mana reduction. They have a way to make all of their actions cost little to no mana. Celestial Alignment, Incantus Flow, Siphon Mana, Final Showdown, the quest itself with Kurtris Spirit Ward, as well as the draw, the discounts in the first two phases, Octobot, Rune Mithrobot. These are the cards that enable combo strategies. And every time I see generally intelligent content creators posting videos and talking about the abundance of combo and talk about how there's too much damage or there's too much draw, they are missing the point. What makes these decks kill fast are the cards that I just mentioned. where you make your draw and your damage cost little to no mana, that's when decks start killing opponents on turn 8. So if you want to meaningfully nerf combo strategies, the things that you target are the mana reduction cards. I don't mind Owl Warlock. Owl Warlock is not really close to being offensive, or even might not even be competitive without Mithril Rod discounting its whole hand twice and can do it four times over a course of a game, which is why Viper is so effective against it. Garrote Rogue would not exist if Octobot wasn't as powerful as it is. Incantus Flow, even though it was nerfed, still enables so much mana reduction that Mozaki Mage can go off on turn 6 and kill the opponent. Same for Celestial Alignment. Same for Final Showdown. If you want these combo strategies to actually be pushed away or be reduced in their popularity and you want to slow the meta down, these are the cards you need to address. If you decide to address them, which you don't necessarily have to do right now. But if I see a nerf to Owl, that's missing the point.
There's no way they do that. They're too smart for that. There's no way.
Yeah, I'm not concerned with Team 5 not understanding it. But what I'm saying, that I want to send a message to listeners and to the community. It's not the draw. It's not the damage. You can inject an abundance of draw, an abundance of damage, and maybe you'll create combo strategies that kill opponents on turn 11, 12. And that's fine. Like, if you have cards that draw, but they are fairly costed, the combo deck still needs to spend a significant amount of mana to cast them. And if they need to spend mana to cast them, then they need to spend more mana to survive and stabilize, and all of that becomes difficult if you actually need to spend mana on cards. But when you start not spending mana on cards and you get bulk mana reduction for your whole hand or for your whole deck or for your whole deck twice over or your hand twice over with Octobot, Penflinger, Shadow Step, Octobot, Penflinger again, that's when you create decks that kill opponents on turn 8. So moving forward, we have to understand the real culprits of what makes combo strategies kill opponents to the point where they're too quick or feel too quick or they feel like they make the meta too fast. These are the cards you need to look at. And I know some of these cards got nerfed, and yet there are still issues. Mithril Rod is by far Owl Warlock's best card. Incantus Flow is still the most important card in Mozaki Mage. Same for Octobot. Obviously, Final Showdown. It's not the quest, guys. It's not the Stormwind quest that caused these issues. The only reason why we have a quest here is because this quest happens to be the mana reduction mechanic in Final Showdown. But Demon Seed is not what's causing it. And even Sorcerer's Gambit wasn't what caused it for Quest Mage. It's the mana reduction. And when you have indiscriminate mana reduction that discounts your whole hand, your whole deck, that can create these strategies. They're like, now I'm going to say this. I'm going to be clear. Mana cheating is important in Hearthstone Constructed. There will be mana cheating. It's important in order to be able to create tension, deck building tension, and devise new strategies. All decks want to mana cheat. You look at Matriarch. You look at cards like that that get reduction on some based on some synergy, on some situation, some scenario that they're trying to promote. That's fine. And sometimes these cards can also be too powerful and get nerfed, like Brute. But those are conditional reduction. Those are one card that maybe gets played too early and you push it by one mana and everything becomes fine. But when you have mass hand reduction, mass deck reduction, one mana may not be enough for Incantus Flow. One mana may not be enough for Mithril Rod. Because the Mithril Rod discounts your whole hand twice. So it could be 18 mana reduction. Is that worth 4 mana? It absolutely is worth 4 mana. Or Octobot, right? So when people talk about combo strategies being too fast, these are the culprits. Don't stop talking about, oh, there's too much draw in a format. No. If draw costs fairly, there's no problem. If damage costs fairly, there's no problem. things start to get to that point when there's bulk matter reduction. Thank you and good night. That's what I wanted to say.
Thank you for coming to our Zach Talk, not quite our TED Talk. Yeah, it's you make a good point that it's really the larger concept here is like, what is the window that players have to make choices that are meaningful against their opponent? And with these global mana reduction strategies, just those windows are so tight as to when you can actually get under a deck or find a way to navigate a win condition before just their stuff happens all at once. And Iron Deep Trog is an example of a card that instantly reacts to it, but I'm sympathetic to the play patterns of, like, the coin differential is probably enormous, it's really snowballing really quickly, it feels like you can't do anything against it. I feel that, but it's playing an important role in the format of Safety Valve against all these mana things, and it gets under the removal or the reduction, the mana cheating, pretty effectively. But you don't want to crank up the power on the early drops, because then what you have is really tight windows from both angles. You have super powerful aggressive stuff against super powerful endgame stuff, and just, like, who hits their curve in that very small window, giving their opponent little chance to react. Like what you said, that if you want to meaningfully extend length of games and make other strategies more effective, you tone down the mana reduction and make them work harder and take longer. That's why I think about a healthy mana cheating card in the format. I never thought I'd say this. Lightning Bloom. Healthy. It gets you 2 mana. It costs you 2 mana later unless you overdraft it away. The Bolner OTK deck needs that, but it also has just this really long setup turn.
Yes, but Bolner Shaman can only kill you on turn 10.
Yeah, it feels a lot more fair.
It takes a while. That deck is fairly slow. That is the kind of win condition it doesn't completely obliterate what people say, like, removal-focused, like, control decks, defensive decks. What obliterates these decks is when decks can indiscriminately discount their entire hand or deck and completely outpace them to the point where all of their possible actions are done by turn 8-9. That's because they don't need to spend mana on their cards. That's the issue. It's not the infinite damage. Like, if you need to spend a lot of mana to get to the point where you get to the infinite damage, that's fine. But if you need to know, you don't need to spend any mana, you just draw your whole deck by turn 8. Why do you draw your whole deck to turn 8? By casting Arcane Intellect, 3 mana, draw 2 cards? No, you're never going to get there. It's because you're discounting your entire hand twice over, playing a field contact for 1 mana and playing a billion battle cries for 0. That's what makes it happen. This is kind of what I wanted to say. Now, I'm not saying nerf all of these cards now. I just want you guys to understand is for us to meaningfully slow the meta, we have to nerf all of these cards together before we even think about nerfing a card like Iron Deep Trog, right? Because Iron Deep Trog right now is a safety valve for these decks. If you nerf it, you make these decks stronger. So if you want to nerf Iron Deep Trog, you also have to address the decks that it's meaningfully needs to counter. And do you want to do that? You want to nerf all these cards next week? I don't think you do. And it's not enough to nerf one of them, because if you nerf one of them, you're just going to make the other one stronger, right? Because they're kind of keeping track of the check. Like Celestial Mind keeps Mozaki in check, in a way. So what do you? So it's complicated. There's layers upon layers of lethality here, and since there, I just think that we've reached a point. Too many decks, too many classes in the format right now have Emperor Thorsen on crack, right? Remember when Emperor Thorsen was a 6-mana 5/5 that at the end of your turn discounted your hand by 1? Remember that? And now we have such easy mana reduction, indiscriminate mana reduction. I think the lesson learned here is that going forward, we need to be careful about injecting too much of it. I'm not saying that it's inherently broken or shouldn't be exist in the game. I'm saying we've reached a point where there's too much of that, where we have 5 classes with bulk mana reduction, indiscriminate mana reduction, that we've reached this point where there's a lot of combo strategies that can kill you on turn 8. And if people wonder why this happens, this is why it happens. It's not because of other reasons.
Yeah. There are so many symptoms, and you mentioned this at the very beginning of the podcast of how players are kind of, they struggle with identifying their feelings and are even worse articulating them. And, you know, we've all had those moments of figuring out we're not quite sure what's wrong. But when you lay it out like that, it seems so simple.
It's painfully simple, which is why it's been painful for me to listen to all the feedback. Because I've been listening, I've been watching videos about what the problems are with the combo decks, and it's really just this. Like, you don't need to look up elsewhere. It's this.
Yeah. It's...
Anyway, that's food for thought.
Balance issues happen when cards don't cost the right amount of mana. So when you let players make cards cost not the right amount of mana as a core strategy, then that's going to feel pretty broken.
When it's indiscriminate, when it's everything, your entire hand, your entire deck, there's no condition, there's no deck building restriction here. This is what it leads to. Anyway, I've said enough. And I think it's important to keep in mind for next week just to temper your expectations, because it's going to be difficult to actually meaningfully slow down the meta. What it seems to be that the meta isn't faster than it was in Stormwind. So that's good, right? We don't want the meta to be faster than that. But I'm saying that these decks are going to stick around because they have powerful things that they can do. And these powerful things will always punish the attrition decks that some people clamor for to return.
We'll see what happens, and we'll see when the nerfs come through, whatever they happen to be. But that's going to do it for us. We're going to wind down here. I'm really excited to read the report on Friday, see what's in that. But everyone, thank you so much for listening. Thank you. Extra special thanks to our VS Gold, Patreon, VS Silver supporters, especially those of you that subbed this week. Can look forward to the next report on Friday, not Thursday. It's Friday. I know I said that a bunch. We're still going to get questions in the Discord and on Twitter about it. It's Friday, not Thursday. We'll have podcast Saturday normal time. Big thanks to Evil Day for the podcast transcriptions. Big thanks to Steven Sensei for the intro and outro. And we'll talk to you soon.
The Data Reaper podcast is an official production of Vicious Syndicate. Don't forget to sign up and contribute your game data to improve the quality of the weekly Data Reaper report. Instructions are available on our website, along with lots of other weekly content, at viciousyndicate.com. Thank you to all of our patrons and data contributors for proving there's strength in numbers.